Thanks for joining us for this episode of the Food Lovers Elective, where we discuss food on and beyond the dinner table. The Food Lovers Elective is a program of the Center for Regional Agriculture, Food, and Transformation, or CRAFT, at Chatham University's Fox School of Sustainability and the Environment. CRAFT's mission is to foster a transformative regional food system that is equitable, sustainable, and inclusive in Western Pennsylvania and beyond. Today, your hosts are Rachel Schatz
and Isabella Missel.
And we are joined by guest Amelia Aiello. Based out of Oakland, California, her Italian upbringing, years as a classically trained ballet dancer, and experience working her way up through the ranks in New York City restaurants has led to her opening an online wine retail shop called Cittavino & Co. We discuss Amelia's desire to cultivate community, both inside and outside the wine world, and her approach to wine education as she hopes to increase access to and knowledge about Southern Italian wines. Opening a business has helped Amelia to expand her perspective of wine and wine drinkers as being engaged in politics, agriculture, economics, and social justice efforts. We hope you enjoy.
Yeah, I am from Oakland, California, born and raised. I come from third generation Italian, which perhaps is at this point we'd consider third generation kind of diluted and not have as much of an immigrant identity. But I find that being Italian and this immigrant identity has actually informed a lot of my current work and my interests and kind of the way I view the world. So for me, it's important. My parents are both Italian, and we kind of just stayed in our little Italian community despite being here for so long. My family lives really close, and growing up with that cultural association has been kind of like my basis for everything. I had no intention of getting into wine or restaurants. It's something that I kind of just fell into. I think that's true for a lot of people in this industry. There are educational programs and everything now, and some people can make that intentional choice to, you know, go to culinary school or such. But also, perhaps coming from a little bit of that immigrant background, there was a lot of emphasis on my college education and studying something and picking a career, being more of an intellectual. And I had no expectation that I was going to end up here. So my background isn't totally in this. I guess I've been doing it long enough for it to have become my background. I moved to New York when I was about 24, moved to New York, thinking I was going to dance, and spent a lot of time in that space and, trying to be a dancer and then supporting myself by working in the restaurant. And perhaps I always kind of knew this in the back of my mind, this like isn't that route I was taking, wasn't a normal route for somebody who wants to be a professional dancer. I was trying to still, you know, get myself ready to be in ballet shape again. And I haven't heard of a story of a professional ballerina who's also worked as a bartender. Usually it's kind of an academic space. You're sponsored, somebody's supporting you to be there and study the craft. So I bring that up because I at some point I kind of made a decision. I was like, this is not working. And I realized even if I were to start kind of picking up gigs, I would still always need a side hustle. And perhaps I took the easy way out, but I was simultaneously working in a restaurant. And if you work in the restaurant industry, you kind of know that if you show any kind of passion and reliability, they really cling on to you. So moving up in the industry isn't incredibly difficult, but sustaining yourself in that industry is. And I was offered been showing passion for wine. That was the way I kind of stayed interested. And then working in an Italian restaurant I was showing an interest for Italian wine specifically, and that made sense for me. And I was offered, had moved, you know, bartending to working as a floor sommelier, and then was offered a wine director job, and I took it, and that was kind of when I just naturally kind of broke off with my focus on dancing. And then the rest is kind of history. I kind of somebody who, when I focus in on something, I focus in on it completely. And I, to keep myself interested in something, I'm constantly trying to peel back layers and learn about it. And wine has given me that opportunity. There's so many routes and things to know beyond just, you know, studying in a wine and knowing its flavor profile. And interestingly, I'm kind of coming full circle in this space too, of learning how my background has influenced my space in wine. And even personally, which, you know, it's nuanced and sometimes hard to make the connection, but even how like my dance background is influencing what I do in the wine space now. That's maybe more on a personal level. Yeah, so I've been now in the industry for almost 15 years, and maybe more like 10 years being particularly interested in wine.
Great background.
I think I'll get into some of the other questions that we have.
Sure.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, Amelia, can you please tell us more about your business and about what motivated you to start your endeavor? And who are you trying to reach and why?
Yeah. So specifically, a one sentence summary of the business, Città Vino & Co. And Co. stands for community for me, not company. And now I'll explain that later. But it's an online wine retail that focuses on small production Southern Italian wines. So it's pretty niche. I have a pretty specific focus. It does, you know, expand upon that topic. Or beyond that topic, I should say. But that is the main look at it. And kind of what I was describing, you know, I've been in hospitality for almost 15 years, and the New York City restaurant scene was what really, I think, laid one of the, it's not what necessarily what laid exactly the foundation. I think I started doing that years before. But what gave me like a really big launching point. And that was actually my main motivator probably in starting this company. The restaurant, especially in New York, just gives you so much access, to, well, the culinary scene and then specifically wine. I mean, the access to world renowned winemakers and actually meeting them and tasting that wine. And there's a real emphasis on the educational space. At least this was pre-COVID and when I was there. And, you know, I'm infinitely curious. So that just, you know, I ate all of that up. And as I climbed the ladder in the restaurant that I was working in and kind of, you know, took on more of a leadership role and gained more trust, I was able to experiment with my own creative ideas and try things out. Not all of them worked. Some of them did, but it kind of became a place too where I could gather some information without really intentionally trying to. It's experience, you know, just, yeah, trying things and learning from them. And that's kind of the positive motivator for me, from being in the restaurant scene, the access and being in a space, in a pretty popular New York restaurant where I had the freedom to try out these ideas and things. And that's pretty unique for me. And I think gave me some confidence, in when I decided to start to break off and start this thing. And then there's a more nuanced version of that. The demands restaurant culture, that restaurant culture in, I'll speak New York City specifically, but I think as we're learning post COVID, it's true for everywhere and in spaces outside of the restaurant, that the demands placed on you, especially as you enter management in a busy multi-million dollar restaurant, are kind of like inhuman. And I also, you know, in addition to finding myself having creative freedoms, I also found myself in a pretty toxic work environment that consistently crossed my boundaries and demanded I work beyond my limits continuously, kind of no breaks in between. So, you know, I guess that's what we mean by burnout culture with the restaurant industry. And, you know, I found that personally, I found for myself, like, you know, I would never recommend somebody put themselves in a toxic situation to learn this about yourself, but perhaps that's just what happens in life. And you know, I try to take these opportunities and grow from them. I did discover that my energy and creativity and willingness to work didn't really have limits, which is can be an issue, actually, and something I'm trying to find a balance in currently. But that I was giving so much of myself to a situation that didn't really deserve it. And I saw how well and extreme I could work for somebody else. And as I kind of just kept getting pushed and pushed, I thought, well, what if I could do this for myself? I can do it for somebody else. I can see that I'm successful at it. I'm making this person lots of money. Can I potentially, if I'm going to be pushing myself and my limits, like maybe I can do it for me instead. Maybe I can make money off of my own ideas and not just give them away to people. And that kind of, that's still an open-ended question. I'm still don't have like the answer to that. I'm trying to do that for myself. But I'm finding that, giving to myself doesn't come as naturally as giving to others does. And that's been an interesting journey, for me. Yeah, so that's kind of my complicated relationship with restaurant industry and what about it has inspired me to take this next step. And then specifically, you know, with the focus on Southern Italy, it's been the greatest motivation in the sense of, yeah, picking the focus. In general, in Italy, there's a pretty big divide between the North and the South, even in modern days. And I find that this kind of cultural and economic divide really comes through in wine and what access we have to wine. You know, I didn't, when I was working in New York, I didn't see Southern Italian wines spoken about in the same way Northern Italian wines were. They weren't on wine lists in the same way Northern wines were, not just in quantity, but like organization. We seemed to have a hyper focus or understanding of how to break down these more Northern wines. And a lot of lists would just group Southern Italian, like, you know, for example, in Piemonte, there's a wine region called Barolo. And then within that region, there's subzones and wine lists. You know, it started to break down these subzones and show what wines they carried within these subzones. And then, you know, you'd look down and then the section Southern Italy would just be like Southern Italy. It would just lump them all together. And so I was curious about that. I don't know, because I always want to know more. So I started trying to look for myself in those areas, and then, you know, found that I couldn't find that information as readily available to me, even in my efforts. So as my interest grew for them, I started going over to Italy more, and I worked. 2018 was probably a life-changing time for me. I went and worked a harvest on Mount Etna because Etna wines were becoming extremely popular It's a region's whose popularity grew faster, I think, than it could handle. And I was, of course, one of these people that became fascinated with it. I went there, worked Harvest, of course, became more intrigued, brought back a map with me that when I came back, I found even, you know, professionals in my community had never seen this before. I would, you know, talk about things that they never heard before. And I thought, oh, okay. So I just gained a ton of access and awesome information by directly showing up in this region. And I speak Italian, and that's now become something really pertinent and invaluable to what I do, because I'm finding it gives me an extra level or layer. I keep using the word access, but that's
okay.
At the time too, I wasn't speaking it that great, but now it's something I totally focus on. I take lessons once a week now. It's really important for me to maintain fluency. But anyway,
can I ask you quick questions just in talking about like the motivation specifically from, this is new information to me too, about like the reasons for being interested in Southern wine in particular. Is your family from Southern Italy?
Yeah, my father's family is. My mother's is from Northern Italy. My dad's family is from Sicily. And even before I was interested in wine, I had visited the little town that our family was from. Funny now that you're asking me that. I kind of always attached more to Southern Italy in interest than I did Northern. And I wonder, you know, we stayed more in touch with my mom's side and we knew more about them and knew more about their traditions. And I think I wanted to know more about the other side.
Cool.
Yeah.
Love putting the pieces together in real time.
Yeah. Because we didn't know anything really about them. No connections to the family. Even the town that they're from now is it's not obsolete. I won't say that, but like nobody knows it.
Cool.
So
let's just get back to the second part of that first question. So love your answer for like motivation of the business. I feel like it's like there are so many different pieces, right, that are coming together to like lead to this part of your life, which is really awesome.
Right.
So is there, who are you trying to reach? Like, are there specific people you're trying to reach or
no? Yeah, I think
why?
Definitely. That's been actually a major question, especially trying to make like a viable business. Everybody asks who your audience is. And initially you're like, everybody. And, you know, that can't be true.
We get asked that question all the time for writing stuff. It's always, that's always the question, right? Isabel, who's your audience? And it's like, stop asking me that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm so passionate about what I do. I'd love if everybody were my audience, but you know, not everybody is as interested. I'm breaking my audience down and, you know, if you ask me a year from now, maybe my answer will change, but currently, my audience are wine professionals because I would like to create a body of resource, a body of work that wine professionals can refer to if they are interested in studying these areas. Because again, you know, it's not that they're non-existent, but I'm still having to go to Italy to find them, even maps, you know. The average consumer for sure. And, you know, the consumer that enjoys wine. I'm not trying to turn non-wine drinkers into wine drinkers. But I think because I took a focus on Southern Italy out of my own interest, and I kind of just align myself with the underdog a bit. I want to help these producers, make a living, quite simply. And I think what they're doing is super cool and really goes beyond just wine culture, goes into socioeconomic stuff too. So I understood pretty quickly that to see that kind of change in my lifetime of where people would, you know, if I say Campania, people will know where it is. You know, everybody knows where Sicily is, but the other regions, not so much, that I would have to reach also the consumer. The consumer in the end decides everything, really. Yeah.
Cool.
Amelia, I was wondering, you mentioned how restaurants generally have more of a focus on northern region for wines. Is that just a lack of exposure to southern wines and knowledge? Or is there like a preference in terms of what people are looking for in the style of wine that they drink? Why do you think there's more of a focus on northern style wines?
Yeah, I think I would say it's the former and lack of exposure and education on it, which is kind of where I'm trying to come in with Chita Vino, because there's a lot of misconceptions about Southern Italian wines. And the reasoning why there's not so much exposure and education is kind of back to what I was saying, that North-South divide more economically and socially. Mm-hmm. The northern regions, and it's changing, I guess. The EU offers a lot of money to support winemakers and farmers. And I think the north has understood better how to tap into that. The southern regions, at least initially, I think they might still argue this is still the case, don't have access to those resources. So promoting themselves isn't quite second nature. The northern regions have groups of winemakers and consortia that get together and specifically come up with plans and programs to promote themselves outside of Italy, within Italy too, outside of Italy. Not to say that the South doesn't have winemakers that are passionate and trying to come together and do the same thing, but there's just more roadblocks financially and like I said, a little socially. Infrastructure is kind of lacking down there. And, you know, stylistically, sure, you might have a preference for Northern Italian wine, but my argument would be, have you tried enough Southern Italian wine to really even know that? There's a common misconception that the South is just hotter, and so the wines are bigger and more brooding and higher alcohol, which is just totally untrue. And that, I would say, is, you know, there we come in with a lack of exposure and education on the topic.
I think that's a great transition into our next question.
Cool.
So the next question that we had for you, Amelia, is, in providing extensive information for customers seems to be an important aspect of your business model. Do you consider yourself to be an educator?
Yeah, definitely. Education's a big platform for me. But I think I'm even more than an educator, or I'm, like I've mentioned, I'm infinitely curious. I'm fascinated at how everything is connected. I've become even more fascinated about how my interest in wine is now, you know, taking an interest in the economics and social impacts of wine. And I think in general, the more informed we are, the more empowered we are to make choices that are right for us. And you know, from a consumer point of view, the more we can think for ourselves, and not even for a consumer point of view, I mean, politically too, we're kind of in this situation as well. The more we can think for ourselves and not be swept up in kind of meaningless trends and fake news, the better, the more you can be a critical thinker. So for wine, for me, having all that information, is there for anybody who wants to engage with it. You know, even nobody really engages with it, as I learned, you know, but that's okay. It's for me too. You know, I don't retain all of this information. It's impossible. Like, I'll write something and then I'll even refer back to my own website to remember what it is. So I want it to be a resource for somebody who does actually want to know. I assumed that would probably be the wine professional more so than the average consumer. But you know, I have some people come and tell me that they've enjoyed kind of pulling apart the website, even if they're not in the wine industry. Yeah. And additionally, it kind of just to continue or expand a little bit on the idea of how knowledge is power. It's just part of my philosophy too, to be transparent. And for me, perhaps this is coming from the Italian background where we're so connected with our food culture, that connecting with what we consume is incredibly important. We, with the way things are for us, you know, we live in a global capitalistic economy, and that disconnect is just becoming greater and greater. We're detached from our own consumption. Totally unaware, and not really, it's not our fault. Like, I'm not, it's not something to feel ashamed about necessarily, but it's something to kind of question. It's just how our world works now, but we're unaware about the products. You know, it's so easy to get something and we don't question pricing. We don't question where it's coming from often. Who made it? How did it get here? Did somebody get screwed over in the process of it getting here? Yeah. You know, we're so detached from where our money is going. So, understanding
that's big topic, I feel like, for us in, you know, throughout like the program that we're in,
yeah,
is thinking about, how we, like, you know, as humans and in the world that we live in currently, engage with the things that we consume. And it's thought about in a lot of different ways, whether you're thinking about like who is the actual farmer who's producing X vegetable, or if you're thinking about some aspect of the supply chain, mm-hmm, in terms of how it gets to the grocery store. I think that I'll only speak for myself, but I do think that there are other people who sort of came into our program because they wanted to think about that exact, mm-hmm, idea, right? Like, trying to figure out how to help create and, mm-hmm, live in a society that's more engaged with our consumption, which can be hard because then there's also aspects of, like, you know, some people don't want to be engaged, A, and B, some people don't have the resources to be engaged.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sometimes I think it's a matter of capacity too, with the busy lives that we live in. We're being pushed and pulled in so many different directions, and being able to take the time and engage with where our food is coming from, you have to be very intentional about that as well.
Yeah.
I love this idea though, specifically having to do with wine, because, you know, even more so than food, if you're a wine drinker, you're likely spending money on drinking wine. So if you're going to spend money on it, you might as well.
Totally. That's how
you might as well know what you're,
yeah,
spending money on, and know that you're going to spend money on something that is good.
Totally. And that's something I've maybe had trouble communicating. I started calling it like conscious consumerism. And like I was saying, the Cittadino is something that encompasses so much for me. So I sometimes have to take different moments to focus on a different topic. But the producers I try to bring in and are at least practicing organic. They might be beyond that. A lot of them are smaller production, not all of them, but and I found too, with a lot of these smaller production producers, again, not a generalization, these ones specifically that I'm trying to source, I were invested in their communities. And I was like, okay, so here I am drinking a delicious wine. It's excellent. It's farmed responsibly. And this person is inspiring like youth and you know, trying to change the way things work in their immediate surroundings for the better. Like, that's a no-brainer for me. I don't know if that message, I've communicated that message as well as I would have liked, but there's still time.
There's time. So in thinking about the education aspect of all of it, and maybe this will also sort of harken back to your experience in restaurants, mm-hmm. where being in a leadership role, whether it was being the wine director or being a, you know, sommelier on the floor, you've had a lot of different experiences in education, right? Whether it's like training the staff of Lupa on how to blind taste, you know, whatever, a Sangiovese, or putting together the kind of educational material that you send now to your customers. Do you feel like you have sort of like a philosophy about the education aspect of it? And like, what kind of, you know, experience are you focusing on curating? What's the goal behind all of that?
Mm-hmm. I think I do have a philosophy on education. And I'll try to pull that apart first. And just kind of, number one is just, I personally like to be informed. And I'm somebody who's actively going to seek that information out. And what Isabella just kind of mentioned too, some people don't have the time for that. And I think that's what I'm kind of trying to provide with Cheat Divino is one, you know, and the wines aren't cheap, for all of the said reasons, you know, organic farms, small production, workers getting paid well, et cetera. But trying to provide or trying to create that trust with people to know that, okay, if you're buying wine from this website, and from me, here's all the things you're going to get with it. And so if people don't want to as actively engage with the information, they can feel comfortable and confident just knowing that that's kind of what I stand for and what they're supporting when they purchase from me. Yeah, if you don't want to engage with all the nitty gritty, you don't have to. If you want to just drink good wine, I can be there for that as well. And to your kind of point about working in restaurants and kind of channeling different viewpoints or what's the right word? Presenting information in a certain way catered to a certain group. I like learning about that as well and understanding who responds to what. And so, you know, if people just want to drink good wine and they need the recommendation, I'm happy to do that, but I'm able to do that for somebody because I've spent time learning about them, and what they like. And that's also me staying informed. And I guess you can think of that as an educational aspect. I'm learning about people and their preferences. And even down to like the language they understand or respond to. That's been, you know, sometimes I have to change that. And then, you know, now in having to do that and trying to cater to multiple people, audiences, and learning about the individual, part of what I believe is that nobody should feel stupid about any questions. I feel that not just in the wine space in general, you have to ask questions and you have to make yourself uncomfortable a lot to grow in something and learn from something. And this is something that doesn't necessarily come easy for me. I used to be constantly afraid of making mistakes. I still am. This is like a really ingrained thing in me, and I'm sure I'm not alone in this, but feeling like I couldn't speak up or ask something or say something because I could be wrong. And the wine space, especially within that certified sommelier space, is very terrifying because people are knowledgeable and you think you're supposed to know everything. And I would even find myself in situations, you know, as, and I still do, as a wine professional, somebody, you know, mentioning a certain flavor profile that I don't get. And I, you know, you just kind of stay quiet. But, you know, now I feel a little bit more confident to be like, you know what? Explain that more, because I don't get it. Doesn't mean that we're wrong here, but in kind of admitting to that we don't know something, we can create a dialogue about it, and both parties are going to learn from it. And I actually find the more I do that, the more I find out that a lot of people feel that way. So if I kind of, you know, say fuck it in my head, I might be really embarrassed by asking this, but I'm just going to go for it. Even again, in that wine professional space, other people will pipe up and be like, yeah, actually, I was wondering the same thing. And I'll be like, oh, cool. Yeah. I'm glad I asked that. I'm glad, you know, I took a risk to maybe feel stupid. But often I find that if people are making you feel stupid, they're actually the ones that don't know what they're talking about.
Yes. I love that. And I think it ends up making spaces a lot more accessible, like you said, right? People end up piping up more, joining the conversation. And then it doesn't become about it, wine being right or wrong. It becomes about the things that you're passionate and sharing these experiences, right? You were saying this and I was thinking about tea. And I read in this book that I have about tea, how in a room with 10 tea tasters, you're always going to have at least 11 opinions. And I find that really funny, because we all have our own palate and like perceptions. And when we're, you know, smelling something in a glass, we're not all going to have the same impressions.
No, it's highly personal. And if you want to open up that discourse beyond, you know, a food space and tasting space, we're all coming from different perspectives. We've all grown up in different areas. We've all have different life experiences, and that's going to affect how we perceive something. And we should be open. More spaces should be created where we feel comfortable sharing those things, because it's really going to offer the 360 view that we're lacking a lot. You know, like I keep mentioning, even our current political climate.
Well, and it's like so I think wonderful to just know that even one person, you as one person, are trying to sort of think about wine in that way and create spaces like that, because I think that as a restaurant person myself, I have often felt like it's unfortunate that wine can sometimes have a very unapproachable sort of like bad reputation as being something that's like a little bit snooty, or like, you know, having interest in wine or having like wanting to learn about wine. I mean, first of all, it often does mean that you have to have a certain level of socioeconomic status, right? Because you have to have the money to be able to pay for it. But I also think it has a reputation of being a little bit like, yeah, like snooty highbrow or something, but I don't think it has to be that at all, especially when you look at, you know, the kind of producers that you're focusing on, who are people who are, you know, in parts of Italy that are less economically, you know, I don't know what the right word is, like maybe don't have as much money as the producers in Northern Italy. And so I feel like that all really connect.
Yeah, it does. And I think kind of to expand upon your point, like for me too, me taking, you know, this wine and connecting it back to the place it comes from and the people and the labor and actively participating in that labor is incredibly humbling. And it has broken down wine for me. And it's made it so much more about more than just, you know, studying something and knowing all the facts about it. And it has opened up that space. And for me, pulled it down a notch.
Yeah. It humanizes it, right?
Yeah, exactly. There you go. Yeah, totally. I was actually thinking too, in you know, things kind of come up, but I think I'm interested in the anthropological aspect of wine, which is the human aspect, as as you just said. And
oh yeah,
that we're all,
we love anthropology.
Yeah, right. That, well, and it's also, we're all connected, and you know, when we're, when we don't feel connected to it, that's when something, the elitism is a detachment, I think, a product of detachment from the product.
That's the word I was trying to come up with before.
Which one?
Reputation of being like
elite. Oh, sure, sure.
Like,
yeah.
Like kind of elitist or something. Yeah. Okay, cool. Sir, considering how much you, you know, you've talked about how much of this is sort of driven by your own curiosity and your own like interest in just kind of diving into all this as much as possible and learning more. Do you have, I mean, I think you already gave us an example, a great example, talking about going to Italy and working harvests yourself, but you can expand on that a little bit, or alternatively talk about like other practices that you have to make sure that you are like in the know, that you're up to date with all the wine information. What is your own form of like of continued education?
Yeah, that, you know, comes through in a lot of ways, because reading about wine and studying it is important, and I still struggle to find the time and space for that, but it is something important, but it also can't exist alone. I'm kind of, this is me personally, but I think maybe a lot of people could relate, like if I don't have the experience to back what I'm reading about or doing, like if I don't actually physically engage with it, it's not going to stay with me. Additionally, you know, to trying to get Chita Vino going, I work at a wine shop in Oakland. It's a prominent wine shop. It's been around for a long time. I am so fortunate to have landed there. I work with a lot of veterans in the industry, and the shop is international. While working with Southern Italian wine is my number one passion, I think I would be less able to talk about it if I weren't exposed to other international wines. You know, everything informs itself, and so being in that wine shop has been amazing. If I have to stay up to date and try new things in order to work in the wine shop, but I'm finding that doing that is directly informing my niche work. So I think constantly, you know, seeking things outside of your interests, and it's not outside your interests. Wine is my interest, but outside of what you're comfortable with is incredibly important. So that's been really helpful. I also get FaceTime with people. So that's been a big challenge with Chita Vino, is it's a virtual space. So I've been trying to understand how I can create more opportunities to engage face to face, and the wine shop is incredibly helpful for that. Has just impressed upon me just the importance of personal interaction, and that that's going to be important for my own business. As much as I hate to admit it, social media, it's a complicated arena. I was trying to kind of think about the complicated relationship we all might have with social media. I feel like it's like to make an LOTR reference, like the one ring of power, the one ring to rule them all, where it's so alluring and important and has all these like almost magical capabilities, but it can really negatively affect your life if you give in too much to it. Finding the balance there is still figuring that out. I don't know, but I will say it's been helpful. Don't like taking pictures of myself. I don't like taking videos of myself, but it's also helped me detach a little bit from those insecurities of mine. And just, you know, kind of back to what we were kind of talking about with wine elitism and being afraid to speak up. And I have some major imposter syndrome that I'm working through, that trying to not take it so seriously and just putting that stuff out there has been helpful for me to kind of get over some of that, actually. But anyway, I stay up to date with a lot of stuff on social media. And, you know, seeing like who's opening what restaurant and who's showing up in the wine arena, it's been incredibly important too, to kind of stay up to date a bit on what's going on with wine and the social justice connection. Yeah, it's been pretty invaluable. What else? It can be tough because it's hard to not compare yourself to others and see all these certifications people are getting, and you're like, shit, I should be doing the same thing. And, so taking breaks is good too. And then also just actively seeking out new opportunities. And I kind of had this fear that leaving the restaurant space, I would not be as up to date and informed. And I'm actually understanding that that's really just up to me. So yes, social media, but then also, I try to get to some wine events, which being in large crowds with people I don't know, it's not particularly comfortable for me. Which means promoting my business doesn't really come naturally for me. But this is true. I've learned this lesson, even beyond in my wine career, that stepping outside of your comfort zone is incredibly important. And it is becoming incredibly invaluable to my career and me personally. So, trying to get out there, and this is maybe also what I was saying too about having personal interactions with people, but, trying to show up in spaces, that, you know, I would try to avoid normally, has become really helpful.
Awesome. Great. Well, I think I'm going to segue into our next question, thinking back to when we were talking about audiences, for our podcast today. We are considering that current and a lot of prospective food studies students, similar to ourselves and other folks in the food industry, are motivated by social justice efforts and are interested in issues of access to education and food systems knowledge. I was hoping you could share with us a bit more about how you envision broader access to wine education and knowledge impacting the industry.
Yeah. It's kind of a loaded question for me because there's a lot of things to touch upon, and I'll do my best to speak clearly to it. It's just incredibly nuanced for me. But here we go. Firstly, hopefully this is pertinent. I've started to see wine less as just wine and more as an agricultural product. And I would like to see wine integrated into this conversation about food systems, because it is. I mean, grapes are agricultural, and each market has its own market. But I think part of what we're talking about too with wine feeling elitist and different is because we're not bringing it down into this subject, and it is. It's not just with the agriculturalism, but also, you know, there's an entire chain that it needs to go through to get here in the same, alcohol's way differently regulated, but in a similar way that food does too. And we've started a little bit to talk about it. And, you know, people are really interested in organic wine. Okay, that means, what does that even mean? That's organic grapes. And, you know, expanding on that. And that's going to bring, I think, wine a little bit more into that broader conversation. In general, then, for the wine industry specifically, we're seeing a shift in discourse, and inclusivity is a major current dialogue, and we're seeing initiatives for scholarships and certifications for BIPOC people, and and giving more platform to BIPOC already currently in the industry. And these are great starts. And it is the start. But, you know, now I think now that we've started that and that's happening, other conversations should need to come out of that, you know? Access to a wine certification is great, but what happens after that certification? Are we providing opportunity for job experience with people now that have those certifications? Is that space being opened up as well? Is somebody actually given the opportunity to use their newfound knowledge? And then after that, you know, if they are given that opportunity for their newfound knowledge, are they given the tools to succeed? What are those tools? And I think creating more mentorship and kind of bringing back this like apprenticeship type way where you would study alongside with somebody and have a support while you kind of navigate these new spaces for yourself. So having access to mentors and people already established in the industry who can offer advice, ideas, a network, connections, that's incredibly important. As I continue in this space for myself, I am understanding more and more, for me, like having that community is really important to succeed. So cultivating this kind of community space that is filled with different ranges of expertise, a space where you can hash out ideas, is incredibly important, probably even beyond the wine industry. But I think cultivating that in the wine industry, and again, I think that would also help with kind of bringing down this elitist, bringing down the level of elitism of wine, and making it a little bit more human. And additionally, I was thinking about this too, because I mentioned, you know, workspace experience. Because we're talking about an international product, and this might be true even for food systems, but sponsored trips abroad and going to the actual place where these things are being produced, seeing it, walking it, engaging with the people that live and work there, will bring your theoretical experience into a practical experience, and creating a personal connection. This is been for me, but I think it's true. I mean, experience is just invaluable. Creating a personal connection has helped me imprint in my mind, memory, like my body, what was just kind of a concept is now something I not just remember, but I've started to create. My brain has been able to open up new connections, and that is directly because I have been able to experience the place. It opens up new pathways in your brain when you can expand and expose yourself to new ideas and new physical surroundings.
Do you feel like the engagement that you have, like, with customers or even outside of Cittavino, like working at the wine shop, mm-hmm. do you feel like Do you feel like you notice any difference in how you engage with customers or what their interest level is like in terms of like now versus maybe pre-pandemic, for instance, mm-hmm. like working in New York, still working in a restaurant? Like, are there any, is there anything that, yeah, that stands out as maybe exhibiting some kind of progress towards like the wine world being more equitable? Like, for instance, do you notice like a lot of other women who are working in like similar spaces as you, in addition to like BIPOC wine professionals? Have you noticed a difference in that?
I have noticed a big difference pre-pandemic in conversations surrounding wine. Absolutely. And making the conversation more about it's not just about wine, it's social, economic, like these other aspects are being incorporated, and people are interested in it. I see that though more among the wine professional. We're really interested in those overlapping spaces.
More so than the customers?
Yeah, not as much with the customers. I, you know, on a basic way, people are way more interested in organic wine. That has finally kind of infiltrated to be a pretty to be a standard for most consumers. I mean, I'm in Oakland in the Bay Area, and so maybe that conversation is really pertinent to this space. I don't know, but I'm generally getting the vibe that you know, if people can buy organic wine, they're going to choose it over the conventional wine, especially if the price point is similar, comparable. And now I feel like I am tasked with explaining to people who come in asking for organic wine, thinking it means all these other things about the wine. And I am learning that actually people are interested in that. They're interested to know that organic doesn't mean the wine is, you know, they're not saving the world by buying just organic wine. And that's still very new though. The natural wine dialogue has started to open up a bit. But it's still,
that's a big thing. That's a big thing here in Pittsburgh.
Yeah. It's still in its infancy trying to understand more about what that actually is.
Yeah.
I mean, because it's kind of a loaded word, and I think,
yeah, like what does that really mean?
Right. And I think what now we're tasked with, again, in more of the wine professional community, or is trying to distinguish between a natural wine trend and what natural wine actually is, because we've seen that, and same with, you know, we're kind of coming out of organic conventional. Now it's developing into this conversation, and because to me a trend is when somebody capitalizes on a term or a hype for more monetary benefit. I guess I'm looking at that from a business perspective rather than the informative end of things. And I see natural popping up more trendy like, and I'm always wondering, you know, what does that person actually understand natural to be? Yeah, in the same way too, like, you know, I see also being on social media helps me kind of stay informed with trends and what's going on. You know, this low sugar wine thing, and I think that's also why transparency and education is a big deal for me. So people can think critically about these terms and understand what is important about the term and what's important to them and what's not. And then they can make their choice, you know, based on their personal belief about it. But you have to have a personal belief about it, I guess, first.
So I guess just going back a little bit to that question.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and you definitely touched on it already, but maybe just to rephrase it a little bit, if you can kind of like try to visualize what the wine industry might look like in 5 or 10 years, what would be the ideal? Like, you know, maybe it's not people, maybe it has nothing to do with people wanting organic wine. Mm-hmm. Like, does it have, you know, you said you wanted people to know where Campania is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I hope I can answer this question. I think this is where, and I hope I can be clear about it, because this is like the headspace I'm currently in about everything. So
that's okay. That's okay.
I would like to see, in general, us to focus on those spaces of intersectionality, and to not keep things so categorized. Like, everything is nuanced, everything has overlap, and one thing informs the next. So I can say this about the wine space, but I feel this way in general about most spaces, that I'll put the social justice aspect on it. Like, not just as it pertains to wine, but I think as it pertains to your individual person, I think, that it needs to be something we are constantly asking ourselves about everything. So like, I'm trying to integrate Cittadino, and I'm focusing on, you know, these Southern Italian wine producers and such, but I also, trying to figure out how my business can be part of the local community, and what does that look like? You know, right now it's me trying to partner with nonprofits and being involved and giving back. Cultivating a community space. And I think that should be, I kind of say on the forefront of every business, but kind of everybody, and
just a bigger focus on community.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah. Community is one, a support, it's a huge support. It also is, keeps things fresh, like discourse fresh, especially if, and then of course the great ideas is cultivating a diverse community, so you have different perspectives coming in, kind of constantly and consistently. And so I'm trying to find that space for myself personally right now. And so and I think the wine industry as well, I'm finding more people opening up those spaces, and providing them, and just providing them, just making them actually a thing. So, you know, I'm like part of a women's tasting group now in Oakland, which is super cool. And I don't know, I mean, sure, there might have been a women's tasting group a few years ago, but now it feels especially important. And it's not just a space of just tasting wine and talking about it. We talk about other things too. So I think that's what I mean too, the intersectionality of things, and how, you know, being a woman is specifically going to affect your wine space, and it's important to have space to talk about other things going on in your life, because inevitably that's going to affect your career, and other things.
I think that's a great answer.
Yeah. Okay.
That's a good answer. Yeah. It's a very hard question.
Yeah. I think it's hard. And again, I'm sorry, I feel like it really heady about it, because I'm still personally exploring this space. So I get really caught up with, you know, what can I do to help? And I get really overwhelmed with that idea, you know? And so, in clearer ways, it's giving back to my local community. It's being a resource for others. I really don't like turning away people when they ask for help obviously, if it's not within my means, there's not much I can do about that. But like, especially young wine professionals coming through, if somebody wants to talk with me about something, I want to be available for that. And I think that's really important, and more wine professionals need to make time for that.
Yeah.
And maybe that's a conversation across the board, not just for wine. And then when I get really overwhelmed with thinking I need to save the world, I kind of try to just keep bringing it back to me. So I think that's what I was saying too about when envisioning the wine space is coming back to also envisioning your personal space. So when I feel like I'm not doing enough or I'm not reaching enough people, and I don't mean that just on the business aspect. I mean that like on the social aspect, like if I'm not giving back enough or if I'm not making my business more about social justice and activism, I think, okay, what can I do personally? Like, what can I do for me that will make me more expansive and open and therefore kind of automatically part of this space? I often answer that with I actively need to seek out a diverse space, or I actively need to show up somewhere I wouldn't normally show up, and give myself an opportunity to learn something new, and that will
better inform me. So that like ties well into your ideas of your what you were talking about in terms of like pushing sort of out of your comfort zone, that you have to get into, you have to like get into spaces that you might not go into to better inform what you want your space to look like, to better inform what future spaces like this could look like, right?
Exactly. Thanks for saying that. I'm glad I had some clarity for you to be able to put it in better words for me. But yes, exactly. Yeah.
Cool. Well, we can like spend a little bit of time on this last bit. We just wanted you to have an opportunity to share something else that's like not necessarily, you know, related to these questions that we came up with for you, about your work that you're excited about or that keeps you motivated or keeps you feeling passionate, like your favorite story or like, I don't know, any experience, favorite moment, like in developing this business or like whatever it might be, just you can just share something fun with us.
I can't,
or more than one thing.
Favorites, so bear with me. I think it's a favorite moment, but it involves multiple moments. I think in starting Chicha Vino and Co., I came in with thinking it was going to be something, and it's turning into so much more than that. And that is actually really exciting for me. I had a moment of thinking, it was like a day when I was just doing a bunch of different stuff for it. You know, it was pouring out of it and trying to get FaceTime with people. It was on the back end, like drawing a map, and I was doing all these things, and I was like, oh my God, this is insane. I am creating something for myself that is tapping into all of these different skills that I have, but also interests that I have. And I am personally trying to create something where that actively fulfills all of these things for me, like artistically, the educational sphere, forcing myself out of my comfort zone. I wouldn't say is like, it's funny. That's a double-edged sword, you know, it's uncomfortable. So it doesn't like feel good, but when you do it and ask that of yourself, and it feels good that you made yourself do that. And so I'm creating something for myself that is constantly asking me to do that. And now I'm understanding I need to have spaces to retreat to kind of recover from that. But, I'm creating something for myself that is constantly asking me to expand my itself. And that's really exciting because I see no limits. Also can be terrifying. It's like a, you know, tightrope to walk. But I had no clue that wine was going to take me here. Like I was saying, I always thought I was going to do something else, and that I kind of just fell into the wine industry by accident and was like, well, I got to pick something and this is what I'm picking. And it's actually becoming something, the best thing for me, because it's allowing me to fulfill all these things. Like I was a anthropology and art history and Italian major minor. And after I graduated college, I thought, oh, I need to go to museums. Like that's the way to go. And I had no clue that just by me having those interests was going to take me here. Like I didn't have to pigeonhole myself into something just so I could utilize these skills and interests. And it's been pretty cool to have the freedom to create that space for myself.
Do you get a lot? I mean, I love the maps that you make all the maps yourself, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So I love that. And I think that because I know you, I know that that's like probably a really like fun part of the job for you, yeah, because it's an artistic outlet, which is something that you always find whatever you're doing.
Yeah.
At the time, you always find some kind of artistic outlet. Is that one of your favorite parts of the gig, or is it like, because you were saying before that you feel like a lot of the customers maybe don't engage with the educational materials as much as like the wine professionals do.
Yeah.
Does that still feel like fulfilling, or are you like wishing that people would pay more attention to the maps?
It's funny. It's kind of segues, but you know, of course I wish people pay more attention to the maps, but that's me asking people to maybe have interests that they don't have. And that's not fair for me to ask. But I don't care. I'm still going to do it because I really like it. So I think also having, is it the confidence? I don't know if that's the right word, but be passionate enough to be like, well, I'm still going to do this. Like, I'm still going to write this article because I'm really interested in it. I'm still going to draw this map because I'm really interested in it. And that's enough for me. If somebody else finds it interesting, that's just an awesome, awesome bonus. It's maybe not the best business model, but still working that out. You know, like I constantly think too, like I'm in the phase of business where I'm still hemorrhaging money. And, you know, I'm back living with my grumpy elderly parents, and I'm single living with my grumpy elderly parents. I've never been happier. You know, I'm broke living with my parents, but I'm really happy because I get to explore all of these spaces for myself. And guys, this is a lot of fun. I mean, I said it before, but a lot of these questions have been weighing on me, especially like the social justice one. The more I can like be open, the more I can create this space for myself personally, like the more it becomes integrated into my business. And I'm learning that actually that personal, how important that personal outlook is on things.
Cool. Thank you so much for doing this.
Yeah. Thanks for inviting me. Like it's good.
Yeah.
You know, stepping outside of the comfort zone.
Okay. So that's a wrap of our conversation with Amelia. I think it was really great to have this chance to talk to her and learn more from her about what Chita Vino & Co. is all about. One thing that I was just really interested in hearing from her was what her goal was for starting the company and how bringing more awareness to Southern Italian wines is at the forefront of what she does.
Yeah, I loved hearing that because even being someone who's worked in restaurants for a long time with Italian wine, I was not really aware or had never paid close attention to the fact that there was such a sort of lack of representation of Southern Italian wines. So I you know, learned a lot even just there.
Yeah, and it's interesting as she's talking about her learning process and her visits to Italy and how she's unfolding these layers of, you're looking at this divide of Italian wine, North and South, and she's uncovering how it's economic and political, and it relates back to the growers and the there just being such a difference between the growing regions in Northern and Italian, in Southern Italy. And her learning about how just seeing wine is so much more than the confines of a restaurant was just so fascinating to me.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I really love the way that we, you know, obviously had to start off with some of her background and learned, you know, all about her time in restaurants. And it's just so clear, I feel like, from the conversation we had, the way that that informed how she does business now, right? And she's sort of forging a space for herself as a woman in the wine industry and as an Italian-American woman and, you know, in an industry that has been dominated in a lot of ways by white men. And I just think it's really great to see how her mind has kind of like been blown in learning about wine outside of restaurants and learning about all of the many layers of what wine can be and thinking about it, as she said, like as an agricultural product rather than as, you know, something that is like elitist or something that is out of reach. You know, I think it's was really cool to see how her philosophy was kind of has been informed by all of her life experience.
Yeah.
And I love that she's so into just being transparent and like, you know, giving access to knowledge, you know, providing more access to knowledge about wine if people want it. But if they don't want it, that's okay too.
Yeah. Well, thank you everyone for listening into this episode of the Food Lovers Elective Podcast.
We hope that you guys learned something new and enjoyed this conversation. Thanks for listening.